Hi, good morning. So today I'm really presenting on something that is much more programmatically driven than some of these other presentations. We could look at this as sort of pre-research, because if you can't identify your birth control method users, you can't really do any research about why they might choose particular methods or why they don't choose particular methods or really anything else about your practice. So we really wanted to start with improving provider awareness and then identify our emergency contraceptive only users. So this is my disclosure. I have no relationships to disclose, and this was purely a labor of love. My other authors are Michelle St. Louis. She's a provider at one of our school-based health centers, and Dr. Tara Stein is our director of reproductive health services and also a provider at one of our school-based health centers. The Montefiore School Health Program is based in the Bronx, and it's a program of the Montefiore Medical Center. As you can see, this map is a little bit small, but you can see where the little red schools and other traditional Montefiore outpatient clinics are the little green buttons. So we're very spread out throughout the Bronx, and we're very integrated with our medical system. In total, we serve 79 schools on 23 campuses. New York City has a very interesting setup in its educational system. Many of the big giant school buildings are broken up into multiple schools, particularly in the high schools. There might be 4 or 5 or 6, I think one of our campuses even has 7 different individual schools, individual school leaderships and principals that we deal with on a regular basis. Our average enrolled population is 25,000 to 28,000 students. That means the parent has signed a consent form and filled it out, which means they have clear permission to access our school-based health center at any time. The average user population, meaning they've shown up and had at least one visit with us during the school year, is generally between 15,000 and 16,000 patients ages 4 to 22 years. And our adolescent population on 12 high school campuses in this past school year, which just ended in July, was 10,216, and that's ages 13 and over. And I actually do always include our middle school sites because I grade it on age, and we do offer these services at our middle schools. But don't shout that too loud. 47% of our adolescents ages 13 years and older report engaging in sexual activity ever in their lives. And we do ask that question on an annual basis, and we document that pretty consistently. About 90% of our patients have that documented annually. So the profile of our adolescent patients is median age of 16 years. It's 57% female. Most of them identify as Black or Hispanic. It's majority Medicaid. That 18% don't know they're insured, don't have insurance. It's really hard for me to say exactly what category they fall into, especially if they self-consent for services. If you're in the state of New York, from age 13 years and above, you are able to self-consent for sexual and reproductive health services. We do not need the permission of a parent to administer any of those services. And when somebody self-consents for services, it's rare that they actually know what their insurance is, and we don't press the issue. 43% of female patients, compared to all of our female patients at this age, report sexual activity, and just 33% of boys report sexual activity. So you can see that there's a disparity in the female and male populations of these schools that we pull in. Why focus on identifying birth control method users other than to be able to just say how many birth control method users we have? Most of our services in high schools are sexual and reproductive health services, and we moved onto electronic health records for the first time in late 2011, so we were slow on that bandwagon. And when you move onto electronic health records, I don't know how many of you have had this experience, it really puts increased pressure on your program to produce data, to produce accurate data, to identify your patient populations consistently, and that's a different mindset than when you are in a paper record. It's also really affected by which electronic medical record you are using. It frequently highlights inconsistencies in provider documentation standards. your chart used to be your chart. Now everybody wants to be pulling stuff out of it and saying things about how you treat your patients. And it creates a space for identifying and improving standard of practice. Because you can see who's doing what and documenting how, you start to see this gap between what a provider thinks that they're doing and what data-driven evaluation can really show you. So we really wanted to use, since it was such a big proportion of our services, we wanted to use electronic medical records to really start standardizing those practices. We started by identifying and codifying all current birth control methods, standard of practice, and documentation standards. So that was, what did our leadership think we had told people, and then what did everybody else feel like they had been told? It's also unique to Montefiore School-Based Health Program that we dispense all of our birth control methods, and that does also include LARC, but the hormonal methods included, and all of our emergency contraception. So we dispense on-site, usually at the same visit, although some Nexplanon and IUDs are usually subsequent visits. But most school-based health centers, I believe, and certainly in most standard outpatient practices, it's a prescription, not a dispense. We identified how current standard of practice and documentation impacted the creation of data. Many people think that because I put it into a computer, it is data. It is not data. You have documented it and you have created a standard of practice that meets the medical clinical requirement. And we're not saying that our providers don't know who their birth control methods are, but it's not data. I can't extract it and use it for programmatic purposes, for evaluation purposes, for research purposes. One excellent example is that depending on your EMR, when you enter something, for example, into a medication list or even occasionally into a prescription list, it is date time stamped. So I did it at this visit. I did it today. It would be date time stamped, November 3rd, 9 a.m. And then you come back in 3 months to get your follow-up visit and for me to give you your next depot shot. And it's already in my list. I don't need to do anything. But for the purposes of data, that has now disappeared. It is no longer associated with any subsequent visit. So if we're a year in, I can no longer identify you using that medication list, that medication is something that's associated with subsequent visits. I have to find your original visit. And then we needed to identify all potential documentation options in the EMR and their alignment with extractable data sources in order to start making recommendations about documentation that would enable us to identify actual birth control users. So what was our EMR documentation review findings? As a holdover from paper documentation, all providers were using a single ICD-9 code for all contraceptive care, which was a counseling-only code, which meant that that code wasn't actually associated with whether or not you dispensed or were surveilling birth control method use. It also meant that we were drastically underbilling for all of our sexual and reproductive health services. It was a chunk of change. Most providers documented contraceptive use method in the note only, which was non-extractable data. And documentation of hormonal methods in the medication list, this is what I meant with the date timestamp problem, disappeared from a data set after initiation due to fixed date timestamps. So those were the main findings and things that we had to deal with going forward if we really wanted to be able to nail down our contraceptive users. So what did we find in the data? So this was fall of 2013-2014. We were doing this, we started this project in the summertime when we're sort of in a down period, and then we went right into the fall and we wanted to start doing this as quickly as possible. So I picked a time period in the past that would be easily comparable. So the fall semester in 2013, and this is what we found, and you can see our campuses, and there's this incredible variability, and some of them are very low compared. I'm not giving you their full patient population, because at this point we were really just interested in literally every single person we could identify. We weren't interested in percentages or ranges so much as we were interested in literally how many, one by one, how many could we identify. And we came up with this incredibly low number, and if we showed this to our, when we showed this to our providers, they were all like, that can't possibly be true. And this was, believe it or not, a combination of coding and attempting to use the med list. So this is very generous. And then the first step was to really clarify documentation and coding standards, because we identified this as the simplest and easiest way for us to quickly be able to start identifying patients, which is you guys have to use the codes properly. If we can use the codes properly, then we will easily be able to identify birth control users and also where they are. Are they initiating? Are they under surveillance? So this is actually a lot prettier when we print it out, and I have a color version, but every provider in a high school now has this tacked to a wall. And we went through twice with them at their provider meetings about how to be documenting in the know, what do they need to be putting in, what counted as what for initiation and surveillance. And then providers have frequently very nitpicky questions like, well, what do I do if she comes in and she was doing this, but now she's changed her mind, or she had been taking it, but 2 weeks ago she quit. So you have to deal with that. But this is a quick and easy way to get everybody oriented to a basic standard of coding. And PS boys still can be using that B2509 code. So we weren't letting boys go. We were just very much focusing on girls and their contraceptive use. And this is the difference comparing those two similar periods. And we basically doubled what we were able to identify. Do I think that we were actually only dispensing 25% of our female population's birth control methods in fall of 2013? No, I don't. But I think now we can accurately reflect what we were really doing. And you can see the variability by site, so like Mount Haven campus is a 20% increase, 20 times the number of birth control users were identified. Most sites were really close to doubling the number of birth control users we were able to identify. So you can see that this makes a really big difference to go through this process with your providers. So in the prior school year 2014, we had only provider anecdote about emergency contraceptives. They were kind of coding on it usually, but not really. They didn't code on it when they were doing a quick start, and they also used emergency contraceptives. So it was really hard to say. And now that we had identified the birth control users, including LARC, accurately, it meant now, finally, we could say, who are our EC-only users, which is really a serious target population. And we found that we had, well, this is just in the fall, which is when we did the initial analysis, we had 268 unique female patients identified as using emergency birth control with no documented birth control method. EC accounted for 23% of all contraception access, and that's across all of our high school sites, okay? And 51% of EC users without a birth control method used EC more than once. And we identified several sites where those stats were even more concerning. And so we provided everybody with that information. We interviewed some of the providers. And as you can see, many providers reported an improved focus on contraceptive counseling after receiving this data. The providers of the five sites reported issues which they identified as there was an EC black market, meaning people were coming in asking for EC for friends, or they were concerned that they were faking symptoms because you could sell it in the school. So, because if I give you an EC pill for free and it sells for $50 in the drugstore, you'll buy it from me for $10 or $20, and that's cash in your pocket. So, and providers at all five sites that had the most concerning stats reported experiencing more refusals of other contraceptive methods. And so this is for the full school year. You can see this is our ability to identify our LARC and total birth control method use, hormonal and LARC, for sexually active females. We're really pleased with how this looks at most of our sites. There's actually a few more campuses now offering LARC, so we expect LARC to be going up in the near future. And this is now what we're showing for percent of repeat EC use in gray. It's well under 50% now at all sites, even our most concerning sites. And the percentage of of females using EC without BCM is still pretty high at most of our sites. And it's very variable. And I didn't include it here, but there's sort of a month-by-month analysis that I did, and you can see that there's like a lot of fluctuation. And since we really focus at this point in just helping providers identify these patients, I feel like this is now a better reflection of what patients are actually asking for. And these are our conclusions and what we were helped with. So we really feel like now that we've addressed provider awareness, the main conclusion is addressing provider awareness, now we can start focusing on what patient needs are. Thank you. Thank you.